Hi, my name is Mary Mogan Edwards. I'm an editorial writer with the Dispatch, and we're talking here today with Tina Pierce, who is running for the Columbus Board of Education. Tina, you have been involved with the schools, helping and advocating in a variety of ways for a while. Could you talk a little bit about your background, what brought you here, and what has made you so involved with the schools?
Great question. So excited to be here to talk about my campaign again to support our Columbus City schools, our educators, our students, and our families. My involvement with Columbus City Schools starts as a student. I attended five different elementary schools: Devonshire, Ennis, Cranbrook, Fairmore, along with Wyland Park. I then went to Wilbur Park Middle School, and I also attended Northland and graduated from Beechcroft High School. So I'm engaged, one, because I'm a proud product of our district. I was fortunate enough to be a first-generation college student at The Ohio State University and probably stayed too long, earning two BAs, an MA, and a PhD.
All at Ohio State.
Fell in love with it. But was prepared and challenged to even enhance my academic skills even more as a Buckeye. And I owe all of that to Columbus City Schools, the mentorship that I received from teachers and staff, be it lunch workers, janitors, or teachers in the classroom, and coaches that coached me as a student athlete when I was in our Columbus City Schools. So I'm engaged because of that, because I want to give back to the district that prepared me for the success that I've achieved in life. I'm also thrilled to be a parent of four, well, now three. We've had one graduate, and he's now at The Ohio State University and the John Glenn School, but have three CCS students. And every day being able to go into our schools and engage with the educators that are nurturing my children's love for learning is absolutely awesome blessing for me. So to be able to come and campaign to represent and stand with the great educators that we have in the district from a parent perspective is absolutely awesome to me, and something that I'm committed to doing. But also standing and advocating for our students and families, both of the past and of the future, is why I do this as a parent. And then lastly, I'm an educator. You know, to the core of my soul, I am very passionate around empowering students of all ages, of all perspectives and diversities through knowledge and skill development. And so as an educator and professor, I currently teach at The Ohio State University John Glenn School of Public Affairs. I feel that there's more that I can do to help our district by sharing my expertise, you know, being in the classroom and seeing how our students need to be prepared, not just for college, but for career and lifelong success. So just to say it shortly, as a proud product, parent, and educator, I'm running for Columbus City Schools because I want to collaborate with our diverse community members, stakeholders, to build a bright future for our district.
What do you teach at the Glenn?
So right now I teach nonprofit organizations and also public management. By trade, I also teach political science. So my doctorate is in political science, and I focus on marginalized groups. So women in politics, gender politics, ethnic and racial politics. So looking at Black politics, Latino, I like to say Latinx politics. Looking at our LGBTQA issues are extremely important from my research and my lens of teaching. Looking at individuals that, again, have been marginalized within our political institutions, as an interdisciplinary scholar, I want to look at how those individuals capture political influence and power, how they keep it and how they grow it. Because ultimately, you know, we want a democracy that thrives, and we can only have that thriving when we have full engagement from our citizens. And so I wake up excited to do that every day.
You told a really happy story of being very satisfied with the schools and pleased with what it has meant to you and your family. But I assume there are some things that need fixed and that you would like to see change.
Yes, would definitely like to see change. So we have to recognize that, I think, as we look at education as an industry, we need to disrupt education in such a way that we are helping our most vulnerable students. And what that means is providing wraparound services that's helping to ensure that our students are ready to learn as soon as they walk into the classroom, that they're engaged and challenged while they're in the classroom, and that after they walk outside of the classroom, that we are maintaining mutually beneficial relationships with community partners and parents and families that keep that learning going outside of the classroom. And so while I can say that I had a good experience in our Columbus City schools, that my students wake up every day and they're excited to go to our Columbus City schools, we can do better. And I want to, again, work with current board members, the board members that will come in the future, to ensure that we're challenging ourselves to meet the demands of a 21st century educational institution that, again, is providing the wraparound services for our students. Providing 21st century skills, technology, not just as a tool that's used in the classroom, but a skill and a resource that our students learn to build and develop. So let me give an example. I go into classrooms and teachers will say, oh, we have Chromebooks. The students are doing stuff on Chromebooks. That's not using technology. Like, this generation is creating technology. They're on Minecraft building universes and worlds. And we get excited because we've said, read this paragraph on a Chromebook and answer these questions. We've utilized technology in the classroom. No, when we utilize technology in the classroom, we've empowered and equipped students so they can create the new Chromebook, so they can create, you know, the next great video craze that's driving everybody crazy and that they want to play, right? We're empowering them to be the creators of technologies, not just the utilizers of it.
Do you have any specific thoughts on that? Like, there should be coding courses in the high schools, or...
So I would say that my specific thoughts related to that are that coding needs to start far before high school. We can start coding when they're in elementary school.
Does the district do any of that right now?
The district does do. Some of our schools do, in fact, introduce coding. Some of our schools don't. So there are some schools where our students are not coding or interfacing with technology in a meaningful way that they can create it. And so we need to figure out those schools that are doing it. What are the programs that are working very well at the elementary, middle school, and high school level, and then scaling that up throughout the district? As we think about the way Columbus is going to grow and the industries that are growing in our region, technology is one of them. And so for me, it's upon us. We have to equip them to be able to go into that industry.
So in terms of sort of more politics and personality issues on the board, one of the controversies going on right now involves travel by board members. What are your thoughts on how much board members should travel? Do you have any views on the things that are at issue right now, the trips that the board president and vice president are going to take, you know, right before they leave office, basically? Do you have any observations on that?
I'll start by saying that I'm an educator. There is a benefit to having continual professional development. I'm a lifelong learner. I encourage individuals to be lifelong learners. And so I will advocate for individuals to have opportunities for professional development. The issue is, at what point do we show that professional development is in fact being beneficial to our district and how our board operates and governs? You have to be able to, before going to professional development, show me why you need to go to that professional development, how it's going to help you govern our district, how it's going to help our district move forward in terms of establishing good sound governance policies for our board, and in terms of moving the needle on student learning. There has to be an outcome related to actionable items for why you're doing that professional development. So for me, one, I think professional development is great. But two, there needs to be parameters, guidelines, and practices that guide how you decide to spend or use or go on professional development. I'll also add that I think we're at a critical point when we talk about the current board and their travel and their professional development. And the issue that I think is of importance in this point where we're at is, at what point do we as a community say the benefit that we will see from you going to professional development isn't there? And does that happen at the 6-month mark? You know, when you have 6 months left in your term and you know you're not running again, does that happen at the year mark? As a community, I think we need to have conversation about that. At what point is it not beneficial for us to send individuals to professional development? And I'm very clear on saying community, because I don't think that that's a decision that should be made by the board alone, because the board benefits from it. I think that that is a decision that should be made after reaching out to parents, to families, to stakeholders, to students. Let's involve students. Let's have some high schoolers come down and say, hey, what do you think about us spending this money on professional development if we know that there's not a strong benefit or outcome for our district?
Hi, this is Mary Yost. I'm the editorial page editor here for the Dispatch. So how do we engage the community other than at the polls? Is that where they weigh in on that? Or are you talking about something that is done by the board in terms of its discussion? I mean, it's too late for the decisions they've already made for this year, but going forward, how should the board engage the community?
So I'm excited to engage the community. That's one of my main platforms that I've been talking to a lot of individuals in the community about. And so the first way that we engage the community is to invite them to the table so that board members are having regular open communication with multiple people from communities, businesses, and organizations that impact the lives of our educators, students, and families. So that means we're going to have union representatives at the table, that we're going to have individuals from our nonprofit and for-profit organizations at the table, that we're going to have faith-based leaders at the table, that we're going to have students and educators and families at the tables. Everyone from your bus drivers to your instructional assistants, to the aunt that's a caregiver and watches the niece or the nephew when they get off the bus until mom and dad gets off of work. They all need to be invited to come to the table and give their perspectives. Far too often, we look at just the parent or just the main guardian that has been listed on the document. And we know that there's so many people that play a role in our students' learning and then also in the work of the district. So we redefine how we define stakeholders, right? So we're engaging all the community. We invite them to the table and have open, regular conversation with them. We move our board meetings around to different neighborhoods. We take our board meetings on the road. And that makes it more accessible for individuals to be able to attend who might have a transportation challenge. Now, we also need to recognize that to have meaningful participation, some of our families might need a meal to be provided, may need babysitting service. And so we have great nonprofits in our community that we can partner with to provide those services. So parents and caregivers and aunties and uncles and educators can engage in the conversation, and the kiddos can be playing and under, you know, good adult supervision. And so I think those are some of the things that we can do. I'm also excited because Dr. Dixon has implemented, established a director of community engagement, Alicia Gillison. And so I'm looking forward to working with her to have regular opportunities to engage our families, not just in the board work, but to also be supportive of the work that needs to happen around academics and learning. So here's an example of that. Ms. Gillison recently had a big table conversation in which she invited community members to come, I think it was at Downtown High School, to share their perspectives on, you know, what's our district doing well? Where can we improve? How are some ways that we can engage families? So as a board member, I want to support that type of work. The community came out. They responded. They shared ideas. As a board member, I want to support those ideas being acted on. Let's make it happen.
You were talking about it's not always just the parents. There are other people who are engaged with children and are impactful on their upbringing. You've got some personal perspective on that. Can you talk a little bit about how your upbringing has informed your, I guess it comes across as your just absolute thirst for education?
Oh, where do we begin? So I was raised in a single parent household. And far too often people hear that and they think it's a negative. In my case, I was fortunate to have an extended family that moved in ways that shaped my thought process, that provided opportunities for me to achieve. And in their eyes, achievement was, we want you to go to school and get an education. And college probably wasn't necessarily on all of their minds, but they knew for you to be successful, you need an education. And so, you know, my grandmother comes from a family of 16. My grandfather comes from a family of 9. And my mother had tremendous help from all my aunts and uncles. So before there was latchkey, you know, my mom would call Devonshire and say, Tina, can Tina get on another bus so she can get off and go to her Aunt Velma's house? Or, you know, I spent weekends with my Aunt Velma and my cousin Ionica, you know, going to South High School as a third grader, going to their basketball camp, right? You know, the youngest student there. But it's that taught me this sense of work ethic. Like, even though you're smaller and younger, you can still work hard. It's, you know, my aunts and uncle, LT, how's school going? Are you hitting the books? You know, asking me, reminding me of the importance of education. It's my mom and grandma taking me to Youth to Youth, Teen Institute conferences on weekends and down the coastside to volunteer. I mean, if there was a summer that I didn't have a job, my mom and grandma were like, well, you got to find something to volunteer. You gonna volunteer and do something. So, you know, they would provide that transportation and make those sacrifices to ensure that, hey, you get this education so you can have opportunities in this world. You know, my grandmother, when my husband and I had our first child, I was a junior at Ohio State, had a scholarship. He had a scholarship running track. And my grandmother, she said, you're not quitting school, because that's happened far too often to the women in our family. You're not quitting school. I'm quitting my job so I can watch him for you. And she quit her job and watched him.
Wow, who was that? Your grandmother?
My grandmother, Gracie. Yes. And so what I did from the time I found out I was pregnant with him, I took 20 credit hours a quarter until I graduated. And I graduated early with 2 degrees because, you know, the level of sacrifice that's necessary, I saw my family doing that and I couldn't let them down. And it's that. That's what drives me, right? Because, you know, as I shared, I have a big family. So there's cousins that are still out there, you know, cousins that go to Linda McKinley, cousins that are at Afrocentric, you know, cousins that teach over at Beatty. I got a cousin that drives the Columbus City school buses, you know, so I see my family in the district. I'm going to fight with and for my family. And that just makes me so excited. That gives me tremendous drive.
I couldn't help but notice in your bio that it talked about all the schools that you've been to, that you were in 5 elementary schools and a couple different middle and high schools, I think. And it said something about that your mother made these choices for your education. Did you change schools for a particular program, or was it just more typical, you know, moving or whatever?
So I think my experience is not unlike some of our CCS students. Again, my mother, and I have a little brother too, Terrell. Rent can be expensive. Finding a good neighborhood, you know, where you have libraries close by and activities for kids. So we moved quite a bit. When I was younger, until we found like a really, really good neighborhood. So I often tell people that I'm a Columbus girl through and through. Like, I know all of these neighborhoods and communities, even though Brittany Hills is like my home. I know the South Side, West Side, East Side, because it's just where I was.
And so you know the challenges of the mobility.
Yes. Yes. So I know those challenges so well. And what I can remember is going into a different school every year and making new friends. And I can remember, you know, teachers like Miss Stamp at Fairmore, you know, teachers, my teachers, first grade teachers at Cranbrook, that just kind of saw this spark in me, like, okay, it's difficult for her. You know, I think some years I might have missed a lot of school days, right? If I missed the bus, my mom didn't have transportation to get me there. So I might have missed some school days, but they saw she really wants to learn. Her mom really wants her to learn. Like, they're really putting in the work. And so I'm grateful to those teachers. And we still have so many teachers in the district that work with our students and families that have those mobility issues. And so for me, I want to, again, work with the board in such a way that we are optimizing our community resources to ensure that we're providing support for families that are dealing with those issues. So when I say support, I mean that we're being able to identify affordable housing for our families in communities where there's support systems. And when I say support systems, I'm talking about not daycare centers where children are just being watched, but learning centers where our children are learning. So neighborhoods where there's learning centers for our students to learn before they get into K. So this is pre-K, this is early learning, where there's good transportation. So families are getting to grocery stores and not buying all of their food from the local bodega or the local, you know, carry out on the corner. That there's community leaders that are out there and visible. And so that's another important aspect is when I was dealing with mobility issues, there was a grounding in church. So, you know, there were my church members over at the time it was called Gay Tabernacle. Now it's just Tabernacle Baptist. But over at Tabernacle Baptist that would, you know, check in with Sunday school. And so even though I had the mobility challenge as a student, there was such a network of support that, and it wasn't like organized. It wasn't like my mom said, hey, can you all come together and provide this for Tina? I like to think of, that's the Columbus way. That's what we do. We support one another. And I think we're at this time where we just need to think about how we can do that in more inventive ways as our city grows. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
This is Alyssa Widman Niece, education reporter at the Dispatch. Uh-huh. I noticed one of the phrases on your campaign website was that a zip code should not determine the academic opportunities of a child. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about what you mean by that and whether you think it does currently influence what opportunities are available to students in the district.
Mm-hmm. So within our district, we provide opportunities for choice. So you have the lottery where students can lottery into different schools. And so my oldest son went to, for example, went to COS, and Malcolm is there as well. COS has our IB program, and that is a great program because it really challenges students to think, to come up with ideas to solve some of our most pressing, not just local community problems, but world problems. And so it's great that our students can lottery into a COS, but wouldn't it be great if we had a COS in every region of our city? It would be great if we had four or five COSes where again, this is the Columbus, this is the CCS way. Like, we have this type of school throughout the district. When we look at, so for example, Stephen Hardwick sat on one of our committees where we were looking at the school building, should they be open, should they be closed? And he pulled me to the side one day and he said, Tina, you know, I found something very interesting. There's more electives that are offered in some schools versus other schools. I said, there's data, there's, you know, you can really pull up data that shows that. Yes, there's some schools in our district that may have 32 electives. There's other schools that have upward to 60. And those electives are photography, jazz band, concert band, music, right? those opportunities get a student to use a different thought process and different skills that are marketable, that are much needed in our 21st century economy world. Far too often, and again, I think this is the education industry, we just like to look at the academics. What's happening with math and English, and you know, how are they scoring on science, and what's the SAT and the ACT saying? There's so much value in not just what students learn, but also how they develop into just, you know, good people through taking a music class. Like, music makes you slow down and just like enjoy sound, you know, and learning to read music. That's a whole nother functioning of how your brain is operating. Another type of elective, home ec and woodshop. I want to work with stakeholders that can bring those type of programs, if not directly back into our school, into our schools in such a way that we're offering it after school, or we're offering it during the summer, or we're offering it during breaks. I like to joke with people. A lot of young people don't know how to cook outside of a microwave. Like, I need you to know how to put these pots and pans together and really cook something, right? And again, if we're offering those opportunities in our schools or with our partners that are working with our school and district, it's acknowledging that learning isn't defined by math and reading and science, but it's a whole package of great subjects and great scholars and great activity that contributes to developing you as a lifelong learner. It gets us outside of this also three buckets we have now when we talk about education. Like, oh, there's pre-K and early kindergarten education, then there's K through 12, and then there's high school. No, it's all together. It's a journey. It's a learning process for individuals that includes so much. And the arts are important with that. The sports are important with that. Electives are important with that. And again, just far too often in our community, what we see is that certain zip codes have more opportunities than other zip codes. And that's not the Columbus way. We can do better.
One educational opportunity that I know the district is exploring throughout this year is the public radio station that is owned by the district, WCBE. They had some financial troubles recently, so the future of the station and its license is sort of up in the air right now. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on what the future of that radio station could look like and whether there is an opportunity for some type of elective for students.
So I would like to see our work with that radio station along with our production elements that we have over at Fort Hays to continue to provide students with opportunities for electives. At this time, I'm not sure what the plan or what the discussions are around that. What I can say is, I think the day after that story broke, I had one of the staff members come in and talk to my nonprofit class, and that story broke the next day.
Oh, no.
And my students at OSU were like, "What is this?" And I was like,
oh no.
We had no indication. But, you know, they have great stories that come out of there. And I think, again, being able to optimize our relationship in such a way that we're providing opportunities for our students and our families. And you know what? And even educators, right? So, you know, current staff and faculty members of CCS that might want to go over there and learn a new skill, somebody might want to be on the radio one day. So let's give those opportunities.
So you'd like to see it remain as that kind of technical resource, but any thoughts on what should happen to it as a station? Should the board remain in the business of having an NPR radio station in town?
I think at this point, we would need to research and really look at what the benefit of the board having such oversight and involvement with the radio station is currently and what it should be moving forward.
So how did that talk go with the, so you had a WCBE
yes.
person coming in and speaking at your class?
It was great because, so one of the focus for that class is to, one, introduce the students to local nonprofits, and then two, to help the students understand that nonprofits are really involved with so many aspects of your life that oftentimes you take it for granted and you don't even notice. So I like to bring nonprofits alive for my students in any ways that I can. And I also do it with our for-profit businesses and our business that are helping with reentry. So my students love when I bring Hot Chicken Takeover to class. Like, it's always a favorite for them that Dr. Pierce has brought in Hot Chicken Takeover.
No doubt. Another position I saw on your website is regarding tax abatements, which I know has been another discussion among board members and the teachers union and administrators. You had said on your website that you would like to advocate for legislation requiring the board be involved in all discussions involving abatements. Why is that something that's important to you?
So the way that tax abatements, let me give my disclaimer here. I am a political science by nature, political scientists. And again, in studying marginalized groups, urban politics is one of my areas of expertise. So one thing we know is that tax abatements are here. The challenge is, however, creating tax abatements that work in the best interests of the community. And so I would like to see us implement and I say legislate because I want it to be not just practice, but policy, that we are having open communication with our city council, with the companies, to know what tax abatements are being discussed, which ones are being given consideration. City council has that power and makes that designation. And so, again, I would like to see just good faith on both parts of our board and city council to be able to come together and say, we're going to create legislation in such a way that we have open and transparent communication about tax abatements.
So are you suggesting that the law should be changed so that school districts can have an actual say, or you just want them to be informed and consulted?
The most optimal level would be that we have a say. Understanding again that politics and processes can be slow moving, I would like to work us to that point where at least we're getting towards having open discussion about the tax abatements that are happening. And again, I think when we have those discussions, that's why it's so important that as a board, we have good, strong community engagement to make sure that we have all voices at the table, including our unions, including our community and family members and business owners. So we're able to communicate to city council, hey, here's what our stakeholders are saying. Here's how it's going to affect, you know, our district. Here's how it's going to affect the resources that a student or that an educator could have in our district. Being able to communicate that as clearly as possible to city council.
So are you hoping for like local legislation or something with a more statewide impact?
So we would, of course, have to start with the local legislation. I think in terms of statewide impact, that gets us to, you know, the way I will advocate for changes to our state report cards and how those are done, and the testing and level of testing that our students and educators are subjected to. And of course, the level of unconstitutional funding that we need to address within the state as well.
This is Alan Miller, editor of the paper. I hear a lot of passion in your voice, a lot of love for the school district and the people in it. Sometimes, especially in a leadership role, whether as a parent or a school board member, some members of the family will disappoint us. And you'll face situations where you have to make tough decisions, including when to call out that bad behavior or policy decisions that don't measure up in your view. And I'm wondering, you know, given your passion for and love for the district, how comfortable would you be as a leader saying this is wrong or we need to fix this, and you know, be the one who stands up perhaps even against a lot of some potential blowback to take a stand on what you think would be the right path to take.
Mm-hmm. So I'm extremely comfortable doing that. Understanding that, again, we're at a very unique point in our district. We have a new superintendent, and with this election, the possibility to really change the composition of our board. Composition in terms of also value and ideology. I bring a very, I like to think, unique way of viewing things because of me being an educator, because of me being a parent. And because of that, because I know what's at stake, I know the future that we're preparing for, it's not hard for me to stand up and say when something is wrong. But more than stand up and say something is wrong, I'm going to get up, I'm going to take off my heels and put on some tennis shoes and roll up my sleeves and do work. I'm not just going to criticize. You're going to see me as you see me in the community. I've done work with Columbus Alternative High School. You know, me and my son started the Worth Foundation, which is a nonprofit that focuses on civic education and empowering young people to have voices in our community. And they organize mix-it-up lunches, and they organize town halls in their schools, and they're continuing to organize, and they're registering people to vote. So for me, and I can't say how many years this will take, but for me, the best thing would be that I'm walking in here in the future with a future school board member that started out as a CCS student that has the same level of passion that I have. And I'm saying, you know what? My time is done. It's time for the next person to come in here and continue to take our district to another level. So understanding that, yeah, you're going to have to make hard decisions, and that's fine. I'm going to explain those decisions, and when work needs to get done, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and get it done. But also being mindful that it's just not my work alone, that it's upon me to find the next person to bring the next generation up so they continue the work that needs to be done.
So I know you mentioned earlier the work ethic that was instilled in you at a young age, and it seems like your journey to being here, vying for a seat again, has been involving a lot of hard work. I know I recognized your name from a story I wrote back in January when you were a finalist for a vacant board seat, and you ran for the board in 2015 as well. So I'm wondering, what keeps you coming back to try again and keep working hard for the seat?
At the end of the day, like I said earlier, it's family for me. It's all of our students. It's all of our educators. And again, I use educators very loosely, so that includes instructional assistants, social workers, nurses, coaches, teachers. It's our community members. It's our senior citizens that continue to say, you know what? I believe in our babies, so I'm going to support this levy and bond because they need some more resources. So coming back to me is just what you do. It's a part of, I guess, who I am. I've always been that person that has a spirit and a fight. And you know, when I lost in 2015, I learned so much in that process. I lost by like 2 percentage points, but that process showed me a lot that I didn't know about, you know, just one, how to run a political campaign. I had one of my students from Denison, Brooke Feltz, was my manager. And so, you know, to have a student that you taught politics now run your campaign, I mean, that's amazing, right? And we learned so much just in that process. And so this go around, it's been like, I can't even describe how it is to go back into these communities and people to recognize you and say, we're so happy that you're doing it again. And I don't take that trust or excitement for granted, because I understand that, you know, once this election happens, people are going to want change, and they're going to expect certain things to happen. And they're going to expect that you don't get tired, Tina. Like you run through from the first day you're in there to the last day that you're in there, that you work tirelessly for our district. And so for me, it's let's get it done. Let's do it.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to make sure and leave us with?
I feel like we've covered a lot. You know, I would like to say to all the listeners, whether you were a product of CCS, whether you currently have any affiliation with CCS, the importance of public education in our nation is something that as a nation we value. We're not just preparing workers for tomorrow, we're preparing people for tomorrow. We are inspiring them so they can come up with the next great idea that establishes, you know, I like to think of Michelle when I think of this, but like colonies on the moon, and that takes us to different universes and spaces. And so I'm encouraged, and I would hope that you would join me in being hopeful about not just our Columbus City School Board stepping up, taking us to the next level, but also being that voice on the state level to say, education, public education is important. And to know that that won't stop at the state level, that it's a national commitment to public education. So I just ask you all to join us as we continue to stand and fight for public education, including our Columbus City schools.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.